Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Overspent American: Why We Want What We Do Not Need is a 1998 nonfiction study by economist and sociologist Juliette B. Shore, written as a critique of American consumer culture. The book examines why households spend beyond their means, why saving declines, and how social comparison helps turn ordinary consumption into a competitive status project. Shore connects spending patterns to work pressure, media influence, and the cultural pressure to keep up with others, showing that overspending is not simply an individual failure of discipline. Instead, it is presented as a social outcome shaped by advertising, changing norms, and the desire for identity through purchase. The book belongs to the fields of economics, sociology, and cultural criticism, and it aims to explain how consumer habits affect financial security, leisure time, and broader ideas of well-being. Its purpose is both diagnostic and critical, encouraging readers to rethink the costs of a consumption-driven lifestyle. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, overspending is a social pattern, not just a personal weakness. A central argument of the book is that excessive spending should not be understood only as a matter of poor budgeting or weak self-control. Shore treats overspending as a socially produced habit that arises from shared norms, peer comparison, and the structure of modern consumer life. The book explains that people often raise their spending because they feel pressure to match the visible standards of those around them. This keeping up process turns ordinary purchases into markers of belonging and social rank. By framing overspending this way, Shore shifts the discussion away from moral blame and toward analysis of the environment that makes debt and consumption feel normal. That perspective matters because it helps readers see why so many households make similar financial choices, even when they know those choices are costly. The book therefore argues that consumer behavior is shaped by culture as much as by income or individual preference. Secondly, the logic of keeping up with others drives endless consumption. Shore gives special attention to the status competition built into consumer culture. In her analysis, spending often expands not because people need more goods, but because the social meaning of goods keeps changing. Once a product or lifestyle becomes common, it no longer feels sufficient, and consumers move to a higher standard. This process creates a continual ratchet effect in which yesterday's luxury becomes today's expectation. The result is a moving target that makes satisfaction difficult to reach. Shore links this to the broader idea of social comparison. People judge what they should have by what similar others have, rather than by what they truly need or value. That mechanism helps explain why upscale spending can spread even among households that are financially stretched. The book shows that the desire to fit in or avoid falling behind can be more powerful than the desire for comfort or utility, which is why consumer escalation can continue even when it undermines long-term financial stability. Thirdly, advertising and media reshape desire by selling identity and happiness. Another major theme is the role of advertising and commercial media in producing demand. Shore argues that consumer culture does not simply respond to pre-existing wants, it actively helps create them. Advertising links products with images of happiness, self-worth, and personal identity, encouraging readers and viewers to believe that more consumption will bring emotional fulfillment. In this account, the problem is not just that ads promote specific items, but that they normalize the idea that shopping is a route to self-definition. This helps explain why people may feel dissatisfied with what they already own and why newer, more expensive goods appear more necessary over time. The book treats media as a reinforcing system that magnifies social pressure and makes consumption seem natural, even inevitable. That analysis is important because it shows how private desires are shaped by public messaging. Shore is less interested in isolated buying decisions than in the larger cultural machinery that keeps desire active and expanding. Fourthly, more spending is tied to more work and less time for life outside the market. The book also connects consumer excess to changes in work and daily life. Shore argues that a culture of higher spending often requires longer hours of paid work, which leaves less time for family, leisure, community participation, and personal development. This relationship creates a cycle: people work more to support consumption, but the added work reduces the very forms of fulfillment that might make spending less central. In this sense, overspending is not only a financial issue, but also a time issue. Shore suggests that many people become locked into a pattern where consumption substitutes for the satisfactions that come from time richness, relationships, and non-market activities. This is one of the book's most distinctive contributions because it broadens the critique beyond debt and shopping. It asks readers to compare material accumulation with the value of time, showing that the real cost of consumerism may be measured not only in dollars, but also in lost freedom and reduced quality of life. Lastly, downshifting offers an alternative based on values, not deprivation. Although the book is critical, it is not simply a denunciation of consumer life. Shore also discusses downshifting as a meaningful response to overspending. In her framing, downshifting means reducing consumption so that lifestyle better matches personal values, time priorities, and genuine needs. This is not presented as sacrifice for its own sake. Instead, it is a reordering of priorities away from status competition and toward a more deliberate form of living. The book suggests that many people come to question consumerism when they realize that their spending habits no longer fit what they care about most. That insight gives the book practical significance because it points toward alternatives such as simpler living, less work pressure, and more attention to satisfaction that is not purchased. Shore's treatment of downshifting stands out because it combines critique with a realistic social response. She does not assume that readers can escape consumer culture overnight, but she shows that changing standards of enough can produce both financial relief and greater personal coherence. In conclusion, this book should be read by anyone interested in consumer culture, household debt, social inequality, or the relationship between work and everyday life. It is especially useful for readers who want to understand why spending often rises even when people feel financially strained, and why shopping can become tied to identity and status rather than need. The practical benefit of the book is that it helps readers identify the cultural pressures behind their own consumption patterns, making overspending easier to understand as a social phenomenon rather than a private failing. Its intellectual value lies in the way it combines economics and sociology to explain consumption through comparison, media influence, and time pressure. What sets it apart from many books on personal finance is that it does not treat budgeting as the whole story. Instead, it asks why modern society generates so much desire in the first place, and what is lost when more income leads to more spending instead of more well-being. That makes it a lasting and distinctive critique of American consumer life. If you would like to support Juliet B. Shore, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.